Welcome to today's episode of In Conversation With, the official podcast of The Lancet Global Health. I'm Liam Messin, and it's August 2023. Today I'm joined by Dr. Carolina Cole and Professor Joe Murray, both from the Human Development and Violence Research Center at the Federal University of Pelotas, Brazil. We will be discussing the research they've recently published in The Lancet Global Health on intimate partner violence victimization and the association with maternal parenting. I started by asking Carolina to define intimate partner violence. First of all, and this is a sensitive subject, what precisely do we mean by intimate partner violence?
Oh, first, thank you very much for the invitation and the opportunity to talk more about our work. We are very happy for this. Intimate partner violence actually refers to any behavior by a current or a former partner within the context of a marriage, cohabitation, or any other formal or informal union that will cause physical, sexual, or psychological harm. So such behavior can include acts of physical aggression, for example, such as slapping, hitting, kicking, or beating, but not limited to this, as we have more acts. It can include sexual violence, such as forced intercourse and other forms of sexual coercion, psychological or emotional abuse, such as intimidation, constant humiliation, and threats of harm, for example. And more recently, the area is also including controlling behaviors as part of this definition. So like isolating a person from their family and friends can be here, and restricting access to information, to financial resources, education, or medical care, for example. So we know from the area that these forms of violence often don't occur in isolation. So they often coexist. For example, it's very common to see psychological violence occurring with physical and sexual violence by intimate partners. And our study focuses on physical, sexual, and psychological violence as perpetrated by a male partner against women, which is actually one of the most common forms of violence against women.
So yeah, as you say, this is one of the most common forms of violence against women. But yeah, this is a global health journal. So is this a worldwide problem? And if so, is this homogenous around the world, or do we see any variation there?
Yeah, so according to the most recent estimates from the World Health Organization that were from 2018, we have 27% of ever partnered women experiencing sexual or physical violence or both during their lifetimes, which means one in three women globally. And the global combined prevalence of women experiencing it in the past year is 13%. So these estimates are based on country-level population-based data from about 160 countries and covering 90% of the global population. So we still have some places where we don't have data to rely. And regarding psychological violence, there is still a lack of agreed measures, so we don't have a global combined estimate in this report yet, but I know WHO is working to have this. But we currently know from individual studies that the prevalence estimates for psychological abuse can actually be higher in comparison to physical and sexual violence. And in 2020, we did a comparative multi-country analysis using data from demographic and health surveys that are conducted in low and middle income countries. So we used comparable data from about 46 countries, and we found an average prevalence of 18% of past year psychological violence. So yes, we have regional variations, and they can be very significant, both between countries and within countries. So we also see a lot of variations inside the same countries if we analyze subnational regions. And what we see is that overall, low and middle income countries report higher lifetime and even more pronouncedly higher past year prevalence in comparison to high income countries.
I guess that brings us on to the current study where we've been looking at a single country, Brazil. So Joe, maybe you could take us through the current work, recently published with the Lancet Global Health, what you did and what you found out.
Thanks very much again for this opportunity to tell you and the audience about this paper. We have been doing a birth cohort study since 2015 of all children who were born in the city of Pelotas in southern Brazil in that year. This study includes about 4,000 children, and we last saw them when they were ages 6 to 7 years old, when 92% of them were assessed. The study was originally set up by Pedro Halal, and I joined as co-director when the children were age 2 to integrate the study of violence and children's psychosocial development in it. So at eight, when children were age 4 years old, we measured mothers' experiences of intimate partner violence in the last year using a confidential questionnaire that the WHO uses in its surveys. And we examined two different aspects of intimate partner violence that mothers might have experienced. The first was emotional abuse, and the second was either having experienced physical or sexual abuse. And our aim in this study was to look at whether intimate partner violence victimization had an association with maternal parenting practices, both at the time that the violence was reported, when children are aged 4 years, and then several years later, when they're aged 6 to 7. So our real question was whether there might be an enduring impact of intimate partner violence on several different aspects of parenting and mother-child interactions, given the enormous stress that this exposure represents. In terms of the parenting we were looking at, we used two different approaches to measure maternal parenting practices. First, as most studies do, we used a questionnaire with the mothers to ask about recent behaviors, and we asked about harsh or coercive parenting behaviors, referring to acts including spanking, types of humiliation and aggression, which are generally associated with poor outcomes for children. But we also asked about positive dimensions of parenting, including parental consistency in their behaviors, which help children understand boundaries and expectations and provide a sense of safety. So that positive parenting that we measured aspects of positive affection expressed with children as well. And these positive dimensions were unusual to have been studied. Most evidence in low and middle income countries is focused on harsh parenting. So this was a quite new aspect of the study. Another novel aspect of the study was to not only use questionnaires, but to directly film observational tasks that mother-child pairs engaged in when they came into the university research center. So did three tasks using toys and picture books, which were subsequently coded for the quality of the interactions, again, in terms of positive sensitive interactions, as well as coercive behaviors. The key findings of the study were that there were indeed robust associations between mothers experiencing intimate partner violence of all types with increased coercive behavior, self-reported both at the time of the violence occurring as well as several years later. And that finding was maintained when we controlled for important confounders. Emotional intimate partner violence specifically also related to worse parent-child relationship quality and the levels of positive affection expressed in self-reports. What was interesting in the study was that there was weaker evidence for associations when we considered the filmed parent-child interactions that took place in the lab. There are number of possible reasons for this difference, but one is the secure environment that that measure was taken in and that parenting was observed in. So it might be that there's specificity in the effects of intimate partner violence on parenting, depending on where that parenting is taking place and where it's taking place in the home, where it's being self-reported on. Obviously, that's where the violence takes place too and may have particular effects. So the key conclusion of the study was that intimate partner violence is an important potential cause of difficulties in parenting, and that emotional intimate partner violence on self-reported parenting practices up to 3 years later was particularly important. And the key contributions to the literature in this area, which has many other studies on this topic too, is to demonstrated this effect regarding positive parenting in a longitudinal design with a large general population sample, and to have this nuance in looking at both self-reports as well as fine-tuned interactions measured in the lab.
And as a follow-up, Joe, this study was conducted effectively within one city within Brazil. So would we expect this key conclusion that IPV can lead to difficulties in parenting to be generalizable first to the rest of Brazil and then outside the country? Or do you think this is, is your study telling us something intrinsic about IPV?
Yeah, it's a great question. And even within Brazil, Brazil's a huge country with great socioeconomic variation across its regions. And so, of course, the findings are specific to the city where they're conducted. But we do think they're likely to generalize. That's first of all because of the way the study was conducted, using an entire population with all socioeconomic strata included in quite a varied city. So it wasn't just a high-risk sample, which a number of previous studies have used. But in particular, is about the nature of the highly traumatic intimate partner violence experiences that we were studying, where you'd really expect effects across a range of settings, if it has any effect at all. A recent mixed method review revealed profound impacts on mothers' sense of self-efficacy in parenting, speaking to a generalized impact across settings. And qualitative studies of experiences of intimate partner violence show that mothers can experience a strong sense of being undermined in their psychological capacities to interact with others, feelings of guilt and a sense of parental inadequacy. So it seems unlikely that any context is going to completely remove such effects. However, we recognize that that's an empirical question. Different levels of social support, for example, or professional responses to intimate partner violence may affect the extent of its impact on women and their parenting. So overall, while it would be surprising if different contexts completely nullified the effects that we observed, the strength of that impact may indeed vary. And that's a question for future research.
And now a question for Carolina. So if these findings are generalizable, what are the implications of your work? And how can we use these findings without further adding to the stigma or sense of guilt, as Joe suggested there, that those facing intimate partner violence already face?
Yes, great question. I think this is a key point we tried to address in our discussion. So first, I would say that given the design of the study, these findings really contribute strong evidence to the literature on the adverse effects of violence against women across the life cycle and over generations. And in terms of implications, I think initiatives to prevent intimate partner violence in the first instance are, of course, very important in terms of decreasing the burden. But parenting interventions focused on supporting the capacity of caregivers, usually the mothers that are the main caregivers, to provide this nurturing care for children exposed to violence, are also crucial to reduce the negative impacts of violence on parenting and beyond. Another relevant point to add here is that our findings clearly show that emotional violence is associated with parenting difficulties as much as either physical or sexual violence. And this distinction is very important because research on the consequences of emotional violence has often been neglected or not carefully investigated in the area. So this particularly independently from physical and sexual violence. And finally, in terms of the stigma for mothers facing violence, I think this is a crucial point, we addressed it in the discussion. While the findings show that violence compromises the mother-child interactions, we need to be very careful not to additionally blame these mothers who are victims of violence by saying, for example, that they are bad moms. So I think as opposed to this, we should use the findings of the current study to find ways of addressing both issues in parallel while designing the interventions and aiming to support both the mother and the child.
And that gives us, I think, just to onto my last question here. Joe, I mean, what's next? What sort of future research does your group have planned? Is it addressing some of the things Carolina talked about? Is it trying to, you know, look at those places where we don't have data, finally agree on a measure of psychological violence? What's next?
The next work on this topic and this group will again be led by Carol. She will examine how intimate partner violence relates to child outcomes, so child development outcomes as the children in the cohort are entering school, and possible mechanisms involved, which might both be indirect via the kind of parenting processes that we're looking at in this paper, but also directly on children as an experience of toxic stress in the household, including using measures of cortisol levels that we've collected with the children as well as their mothers. In the longer term, we plan to follow these 4,000 children through their lives. We've seen them 6-7 times to date, and we plan to see them again when they're age 11 years old next. And in this kind of life course study, we'll be looking for the children at other forms of exposure to violence as well, including maltreatment, their exposure to community violence, which is a major problem in Brazil, and examining how these different forms of violence and when they're experienced through development influence children's psychosocial adjustment and health outcomes. As well as that, we're trying to integrate looking at the drivers of early aggressive behaviors and potential drivers of future perpetration of violence, both in the home and the community. And more about these projects can be found at the Human Development and Violence Research Center website. That is www.doveresearch.org.
You can read their work now on thelancet.com. And I'd like to thank both of our interviewees. I'd like to thank you for listening. You can subscribe to this podcast any place you usually get your podcasts.